So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun, he sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
And this is the Chicago way, which is like Radio Free Europe, only it's in Chicago and it's a podcast. With me, Jeff Carlin and Christian McQuarrie at Statehouse Chick. We're recovering from the recent elections. Rahm's coming out of his hiding place. We've got Supreme Court justices to talk about and fight over. But first, I'd just like to, can I share a little thing?
Yes, please.
So as the primary was ending in Chicago, I went outside, poured myself about two fingers full of scotch, maybe three, and sat out there with my dog Zeus and looked at the night sky, and it was ready to storm. And from inside the house, Betty had the TV on, and I could hear Hillary Clinton, who had just won the Illinois primary, screaming like she was angry. And I thought, man, this storm is coming. You know, I could just feel it all coming. That's my little...
It was. I had a civil...
Poetic thing.
I was leaving the Tribune probably about 11:30, close to midnight last night, and
after
it was downpour.
After your many media appearances.
Right. So many. Sitting at my desk most of the night trying to update returns, which also reminded me how, you know, the polls are so accurate now. Our technology is so great that we get results immediately. Election night's not even fun anymore. It's not, there's no big surprise. You're not redoing the page at midnight like it used to be.
Because we just updated digitally. I wrote two columns ahead of time.
Yep.
I used to be Mr. Three Columns.
Oh, my goodness.
On the paper day. Because it was, you know, win, lose, or draw.
Hmm.
So now I wrote a column early in the day to have it give the internet beast something to feed upon.
Feed the beast.
Yeah, and then tell the next one for the next day after the election about Rahm as the big loser, the woodchuck, not woodchuck, what is he, Jeff Carlin? The wood, Punxsutawney Phil, like
he's the groundhog.
Groundhog, yeah. Coming out of the den now, not, you know.
That
not,
was an excellent column, but, because I've been wondering where he is.
What do you think? Where was he?
I just think with all of the Quan McDonald uproar, I think lying low has been a very pointed strategy from his team, especially with Anita Alvarez and her big loss. I think he wanted to stay as far away from that as possible. I mean, I think he's kryptonite. I mean, look at Hillary Clinton was being asked over and over again on national news channels about her connection to Rahm and whether or not that was going to hurt her.
Why aren't you standing with Rahm
right
in front of black people to get their votes?
Because he's unpopular.
Right. Extremely so. Jeff, were you surprised by Rahm's hiding?
No, I think you hit on the head. He's toxic. I mean, I don't think he does any good for anybody. He has got no clout. He's been dethroned, essentially, or castrated, if you will, as far as his power is considered.
Castigated, I would say.
Oh, okay. Well, you can say
I
that.
I like castrated.
I think all signs point away from him, so he is toxic. I mean, look at, he's done a lot of quiet little pieces. He joined the morning show on WGN last week, and it was to tout something else and something that nobody could, you know, disparage. I can't remember what it was, but it was some sort of schools
program.
Was
it like, and don't ask me anything about Hillary?
I mean, I wasn't involved in it, but I heard it, and he didn't say anything other than, you know, hey, we got this great new program. It's going to be great for the kids.
And I could hug African-American children.
Yes.
Hi. Exactly. And give them high fives. Hi, bro. Like that.
Exactly.
Like you did on that Chicago way.
Chicago Land. It was so natural, wasn't it? Watching him interact with African-American
painful
teenagers.
It wasn't like you're...
Not
yeah, and
all.
I have a book for you. I remember he did that. I have a book, some kid, some 16-year-old hanging around him saying, I have a book for you. My children read it. Like they're nine.
Right.
Yeah, you know, his kids are like little. My daughter's read it or something. It was sad. All right, so... Takeaway from, as we move forward, two big ball games. November, because the state of the state is in balance and play, and, you know, then Rahm's succession. Those, you know, and obviously the presidential. But let's talk locally for a second, Christian. You focus a lot on that, on the state house, as state at State House Chick, your former haunts. How do you see politics playing forward going toward November between Governor Bruce Rauner, the Republican, and Mike Madigan, you know, the con of the windswept, whatever it is, wasteland of Madiganistan?
Well, in two key races, Rauner suffered losses. One was very much a Rauner versus Mike Madigan proxy war, and that's the Ken Duncan seat. Ken Duncan lost. And Obama played a big role in that, you know, trying boosting Juliana Stratton. So that was a big win for Madigan. And Ask Me, the state's largest employee union, won in a big central Illinois district against Rauner. So two of the governor's biggest adversaries, Ask Me and Mike Madigan, had two big wins. So I think it does kind of set him back on his heels a little bit, which might translate into more progress, or, you know, having him maybe drop some of the heated rhetoric about public employee unions as we move forward with budget negotiations. But Rauner and his allies did win in 6 out of 8 Republican primaries, where they were running Republicans who support Rauner's agenda. So,
including one that were a Republican voted against the governor on a prison in a prison district, right? I think
that was the Ask Me one that I was Rauner actually lost that one.
Okay.
But he kind of strengthened the Republican caucus by infusing more members who will head into November now who support his agenda. Now they have to win in November. And the Republican Party has to pick up some seats, at least one in the House.
I talked to Jim Durkin, the state, or what is he, the House Minority Leader.
Correct.
From Western Springs. And he said that, you know, we must pick up, there's no doubt about it, they have to pick up seats. They will have money this time as opposed to other times they've run against Madigan's people. Hate to be partisan here. I'm not trying to be partisan, everybody. If we were in Alaska, I'd be taking the other side. But in this state, if you vote for a Democrat for state house or vote for a Democrat for the state Senate, you're really voting for Mike Madigan and his mini-me, John Cullerton, to be the bosses of Illinois. That's what you're really voting for, aren't you?
You are. And it's so, I sit at election night every night thinking maybe there will be some upstart challenger candidate who knocks out a Democrat in the state, just as a show of, you know, we don't like the status quo. It doesn't usually happen. And last night was another example in my mind of the dichotomy of voters. We rail against our government, but we continue to send the same people back. And incumbents outside of Alvarez, Duncan, incumbents did really well last night, including some of those Madigan Democrats.
But Alvarez, Anita Alvarez, did poorly.
She lost. She lost.
Swamped. I think I go back to, you know, obviously the Laquan McDonald thing is what everyone focuses on. And just for a refresher, Laquan McDonald, 17-year-old, young man on some sort of drugs with a knife in his hand, refused orders from police to drop it. He was shot 16 times, at least 14 of those while he was on the ground. People saw the video. Rahm suppressed the video. At least that's been my take in the column. I think it's mostly accepted now. And he lost African-American support as a result. But where does it go from here, Kristen?
I mean, that's a good question, because the officer has been indicted and charged with murder. Anita Alvarez still has that seat until after November, when whoever is sworn in, let's just assume it's the Democrat because it's a Democrat-leaning state, but there is a Republican on the ballot.
With the most impronounceable name ever.
Correct. But, I mean, Kim Fox is the Democratic nominee after the results from Tuesday. And between now and then, will the case, you know, go to trial against this officer? Will she handle it? Will they hand it down to someone below her who will carry it through beyond her term? But really, the criminal charges are the next aspect of that case, and whether or not they're going to charge the officers who allegedly falsified police reports on the scene that night.
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I think it's an easy guess to say Kim Fox takes the vote here, and I think that Anita's involvement in this, her fingerprints are all over it, and to save face, they're going to have to take it from her and give it to somebody else who's going to be here for the long term, because it's not going to be a short case. There's no way it only goes a few weeks because of its the high-profile nature of it. So I think Kristen's dead on there, and I think it's going to be a really interesting test of how it's handled. If it goes against, if he's acquitted, does Kim Fox, you know, what does she do to that?
How is she going to hire Lovey and Lovey? The lawyers who make a fortune going after cops to be the special prosecutor in this case?
Well, probably lose most of the time. I mean,
they settle and they make a lot of money. There's a huge multi-million-dollar industry called the innocence industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Tribune editorial board's weighed in on that, I think. I'm not mistaken. Here's my take. If Anita Alvarez had won, because I wrote that early column on Election Day, if Anita Alvarez had won and been the nominee, I would have bet that the Republicans would move Mr. J.P. Kapuja. I don't know.
I can't pronounce it.
But he's a 30-year experienced prosecutor, a guy who knows the... But that has nothing to do with politics. That
right.
has to do with qualifications.
If it was based on experience and qualifications, I don't think Kim Fox would have won.
Because she's never tried.
Exactly.
She doesn't know her way around a courtroom.
Right.
Let's be honest about this. So,
well, she's...
Well, come on.
Not as a lead.
Not as a lead, but she was in juvenile for a long
time.
That
doesn't count.
Okay. That's
juvenile
fine.
Court is like you and me and Jeff sitting around, and you're the judge, and we're the attorneys, and we sit around the table, and we say, okay, what are we going to do about this young man? That's
all
what
right.
it is.
All right. I just wanted to defend her for a minute.
No, I think she's a talented, she has a political talent,
mm-hmm.
and she is the hammer in Tony Preckwinkle's hand from now on. Let's be honest. Tony Taxwinkle, the Cook County. sorry,
Tony
can
Taxwinkle,
I say that?
Yes.
Tony Taxwinkle, Cook County Board President, finally has her hammer, and that's what Rahm doesn't like, and none of the others. Except, we'll see. I think she'll play with Boss Madigan.
Sure. I have a point to that too,
yeah,
John. But
please.
Kim Fox also, you know, there's a big schism between police and the African American community specifically. I mean, that's the biggest one. There's obviously a lot of problems there.
Right.
Kim Fox being black, being an African American. In that position, does she help fix that relationship just being an African-American who is this quote-unquote grassroots push and the people from the community have come out to help and push Anita out and push her in? Does she help? And what happens if nothing changes?
What happens when she indicts somebody for murdering two kids? Then she's evil?
Right. I mean, or if the crime rate doesn't go anywhere and, you know,
it keeps going up
or what happens then? Where do they go to? Who's their white knight, if you will?
Well, I think it does help, at least in the initial phase, because that is a lot of reason. That is why Anita Alvarez got ousted, because they felt, you know, she did have this divide with the black community. I would point out, though, that Anita Alvarez was the first Hispanic woman Cook County State's attorney.
Yeah.
And I didn't see her building any bridges with the Latino community. I mean, if you're a serious prosecutor, this is a colorblind office. And so we'll see if it is for Kim Fox as well.
When Laquan McDonald happened and the video came out, there was a telling tweet. And the tweet was David Axelrod throwing Anita Alvarez under the bus nationally. I know because it was picked up and friends saw it and sent it to me and I wrote about it. He basically said, why did it take you so long to 100 days or whatever it was, 100 months, 2,000 years?
400 days.
400 days, whatever. Anita, come on, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, David Axelrod is Obama's mouthpiece, Rahm's mouthpiece, and Rich Daley's mouthpiece. And for David to do that meant that Rahm was throwing Anita under the bus from the beginning to get any problem away from him. Now, if she had won, I would have suggested that the Republicans would have found a replacement for Mr.
Christopher Fancucci, Fancucci.
I'm going to go see him.
You should.
I'm going to go talk to him.
I hear he's well qualified, and your readers will help us with pronunciation.
Yes. I think he's very qualified.
Yes.
He does not have nearly the persona.
But he doesn't
persona.
Have name recognition.
Well, yeah, he doesn't have name recognition for sure, and he doesn't have the persona that Kim has
at all. They would have moved him out. The Rauner and those people would have gotten together and said, look, we'll find you something else. We're going to put a high-profile guy to take advantage of the anti-Rahm dynamic in the suburban and minority areas in Cook County, because the ball game is the state legislature. This follow me along here.
I'm with you.
That sounds crazy.
I'm with you.
Now, though, with Kim Fox in, do they leave it alone, or do they find someone who will match up against Kim Fox to drive turnout.
Mm-mm. No, this is done. I don't think the Republicans will touch her. I don't think they want to spend any money or resources or time on the Cook County State's Attorney's race. This was a very decided victory. And like you said, they've got bigger fish to fry. So I think their attention will be very much elsewhere. This is, I mean, Kim Fox, for all intents and purposes, unless something gets derailed, will be the next Cook County State's Attorney.
And then what is she going to do? Because, Jeff, you brought it up. She's sort of like the mitigating factor, like the den mother of, she's like the Cub Scout mom of crime. She's not, she doesn't want to put you in jail. She wants to mitigate. But the job of the prosecutor of Cook County with the gang wars that are like laying waste to whole neighborhoods, and people are getting shot in the Tribune stories, Peter Nikias and the reporters on our breaking news center with these incredible, heartbreaking stories where a woman's sitting there saying, why? I'll never forget that one. And all the others, her job is to not mitigate but put people in prison, right? So how's that going to work out when her own patron, Tony Preckwinkle, opposed mandatory minimum sentencing, which is, I think, something that needs to happen in this state?
Well, that's the question. You've just succinctly said it. She's in that slot because of Tony Preckwinkle, who is a very much a social justice advocate who wants to reduce sentencing. I think there's actually a movement, though, even among Republicans and conservatives nationwide and in Illinois, to, you know, reduce sentences and jail time for nonviolent drug offenders. I think if Kim Fox takes that route, she'll be okay, because there's not a whole lot of disagreement that, you know, someone for retail theft does not need to be sitting in Cook County jail, whether you look at it from a fiscal perspective and how much that costs, or from a social perspective and a compassionate perspective. They don't need to be jailed.
No, they don't need to be jailed
if they steal a big lighter.
But if they're boosting, you know, $100,000 alligator skin jackets, that's a different deal, right?
Is it? I mean, I don't know.
If they steal from me, I'll be upset.
Okay, right.
But if they steal from you, I guess we'll let them go under
it,
your.
You're right. It
your
depends
program.
On what they steal. But right. I do think there's probably some room to see where Kim Fox is going to take this, and if she's, I hate to say, like, I trust them to do the right thing, but I do think once you have a prosecutor and the public defender in a room, there probably is a little more room to, you know, not be so law and order on some of these smaller offenses.
How about you? Do you want to join with the Kim Fox State House chick contingent and give criminals a hug now, Jeff Carlin?
No, I don't. But I think you have to see, too, how Kim will work with someone like Tom Dart, you know, who's got to house these people and make this. And I don't mean he's people, criminals. I don't mean anything else by that. But he's got to figure out where we put them. And we're already overcrowded. We already have mental health issues that are essentially overshadowing the actual criminal problems.
Very skillful of Dart's PR people to turn it from a criminal thing to, hey, they're all mentally ill, so what
not
am I
all,
supposed
but,
to do? Oh, that was, but that's the meme that comes out, right?
Well, I don't think it's unfair, though.
I want to tip of the hat to Hanky Gratteau, Adam Palish, all our former colleagues who helped that along, I think.
You had some cynicism in your coffee this morning.
No, I just have real, it was the scotch from last night.
Oh, I gotcha.
One. But I don't know. Maybe I got hit by some ozone shock thing that went through the air. I don't know.
There was a lot of lightning.
Okay, Tom Dart. Does he want to be mayor?
Yes.
So maybe is he going to leave the Mike Madigan lap and go to Tony Preckwinkle and Kim?
I don't think he's been too cozy with Mike Madigan, even when he was in the House.
Yeah, right. Didn't they want to strangle him in his bed when he was little to protect Lisa's future?
Right. He made the egregious error of suggesting, or maybe he even filed paperwork, to run for Attorney General.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Oh, boy. That ended real quick.
I heard that the electricity and sewage services for the 19th Ward was shut down for 3 weeks in retaliation for that. Is that true?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Right?
But yes, I mean, he threw his hat into the ring last time around and, you know, started raising money and then realized he probably wouldn't have the infrastructure to put together a mayoral campaign, so he backed out.
So somebody's going to be mayor. Can Rahm rehabilitate himself?
I think so. I mean, I always go back to the short-term memories of voters. We really have short-term memories. And the Laquan McDonald explosion happened early enough in his term that he might, depending on what happens with the Justice Department investigation and with that case, he might be able to, you know, calm those opponents enough to, you know, make another run for it. But
because
I think
they won't see advantage in perpetuating, since they already got something out of it, right? Like a state's attorney job. Now they'll play the game and be a little bit more, you know, let's keep what we have and not, you know.
Well, it also depends on if we see like a strong African-American candidate. People talk a lot about Kurt Summers. He's now the city treasurer, but he's an ally of Rahm's.
Michael Sachs. Whenever I see Kurt, I think of Rahm's money guy.
Yeah, I think he
and
worked
I know Michael.
For that.
What?
Did he work for Michael Sachs?
Yeah.
I might be mixing
and
up
Michael
my
Sachs
Michael
also
Sachs
dropped,
apprentices.
Dropped a whole bunch of money into the Bobby Rush race at the end.
I saw that.
Right?
Bobby Rush crushed crushed Brookins.
Right.
Yeah, despite rarely showing up for a vote in the House, despite his district stretching now way out into the southwest suburbs, picking up a lot more conservative Democrats and Republicans, and despite an ethics investigation, Bobby Rush won another term.
So Bobby Rush, who helped Rod Blagojevich, remember Bobby Rush? No, people forget this stuff. Okay, I'm sorry to be such a
no. We
skunk.
We want your authoritarian.
Remember when Bobby when Blago was going to appoint Tombstone Burris to the Senate?
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden Bobby Rush shows up, like, whoa! And there's Bobby Rush. He's at my news conference. Come on up here, Bobby. And Bobby's like, doing his old, you know.
If you know, don't appoint Roland Burris,
you're not
racist.
Black enough, or
right.
Whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not black enough, Rod Blagojevich, but you are now.
Right.
And I never forget seeing Bobby Rush at the last State of the Union speech. Remember, Bobby Rush said, Obama, you're not black enough, and beat him and turned Obama into the, you know, to reach towards the machine way, right, to learn how
that
to do this.
That was in 2000
right.
When Obama lost, just like Howard Brookins last night, Obama got creamed.
And Bobby Rush comes around, tries to snuggle up to the president. He's walking by, like, hey, we're friends. Like, hey, bro.
Yeah.
And the president would just kept walking.
Did he? It you mean just, when he visited the general? During
the State of the Union.
Okay.
It was just, I love to see politicians, like, trying to, you know, get on their knees and kiss someone's ankles or feet.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
and,
pretty fun
and
to watch,
want,
isn't
right?
it?
Right? There's Jeff laughing. Jeff.
I love your descriptions of politics, John.
Don't you? What do you think it is, Jeff?
I think you're absolutely
what do you think,
right.
They're like saints, like,
no.
like me, you, and Kristen. We're sitting here in the WGN studios with the birds nestling on our fingers as we stretch them, right? With the bird bath right here.
Yes.
Okay, so Ron, you think Ron will be rehabilitated? Anita, I mean, what's Anita going to do now?
I don't know. I mean, she will probably do what all former state's attorneys do and go get a really cushy, nice, well-paid job at a private law firm. I mean, her expertise is really invaluable and would be to any firm. So she will land on her feet somewhere in the private sector, is my guess.
And forgotten in all this stuff about Laquan McDonald, police and brutality and crime and the race card and everyone using all different aspects of this thing to get out vote. There's one name that's forgotten in all this. He was 21 years old. He was 5'4" and 120 pounds. He was punched once when he was drunk on Division Street. His name was David Kochman. The puncher was Richard J. Van Echo. And I think that Anita's mishandling of that and the cops that lied and everyone walked because Dan Webb did his whole, I'm going to investigate, I'm the special investigator, and no one got spanked for it, really, except Van Echo served, what, 60 days in a jail in the suburbs. To me, that was the problem. That was always the problem. Not Laquan, because I could have given her a break on the Laquan. You don't know who cops are lying. You're waiting for the feds to go. But that one was terrible. And it's over now.
Yes, and if not for a few journalists, yourself included, that story would have never come to light. The mother finally did get a settlement from the city, I think for, it wasn't much, $250,000.
Timmy Novak and Chris Fusco and Carol Marine. Sometimes did all the work on that one.
If not for those journalists, we wouldn't even know about that story. But you're right. When she tried to, I don't want to say cover up, but there was enough evidence that this was kind of a culture within the office. So
correct.
When you combined Veneco with Laquan McDonald, I think she lost a lot of her support. And so when I was watching the returns last night, people thought she was, if she won in the suburbs, you know, this, you law and order, you know, you want a tough prosecutor,
right.
And she is one. I mean, there's no question.
Yeah.
She's a tough prosecutor. That maybe that would be enough to pull her over the edge. But Kim Fox was even one in almost all of suburban Cook County.
And now with the summer coming and more bodies hitting the floor, Kim Fox can't be the, you know, Cub Scout den mother of crime. She has to realize who she is, which is the prosecutor of Cook County, put people away for life for murder. I just think that's going to be a tough job. And when she strays from the party line and decides to indict people and her cases go bad, and they always do, not all cases go bad, but some do. Let's see how the media treat her and how she's treated by her friends on the MoveOn.org, Black Lives Matter left.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be very interesting to see. Thanks so much for being a part of this today. I know that you have many other commitments, being the media star and writing editorials and so forth.
Yes.
Do you have a column coming up?
I do. I don't know if you plan, how far ahead you plan your columns, but I have
one. Every 5 minutes.
Right, exactly. So I have a blank page in my brain right now, but yes, I have a column, and we will be analyzing some of the returns on the editorial page. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. State House Chick. Adios.
When November is here, a national election is drawing very near. Put up bumper stickers, posters, and signs for your candidates, it's voting time. Every other year, when November is here, a national election is drawing very near. We will get to pick who our leaders will be. Aren't you glad we have democracy? Hey. Every other year in November, there's election day. Everyone will hear loud and clear what the people say. We live in a land that was founded on democracy. This was an idea from the ancient Greek philosophy. Voting can help people bring about what they want to see. They can pick the leaders that they think will act responsibly. Aren't you glad we have democracy?
You know, I know we talk a lot about politics on this show because politics is happening. But there's a lot of other stuff happening, too. Just wanted to let you know. I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, depending on how Jeff Carlin's going to be cutting this podcast. But the other day, and I decided to make some lamb shanks. Okay? The kids were home. And I made these great lamb shanks, braised them. I probably will be writing about it because I want to take a break from palate. You know what I mean,
well,
Jeff?
Yeah.
Right?
Cleanse your palate.
Cleanse my palate with a bunch of lamb shanks braised on a bed of garlic.
A bed.
I mean, I'm using garlic. 40 pieces of garlic per pan. And I lay the lamb shanks on top and then braise them. Turn up the heat in the oven after seasoning to about 450, 500, almost 475, but our oven is a little off,
sure.
A little cold. And then covered them, put some lado lemono, you know what lado lemono is, oil,
mm-hmm.
and lemon, oregano, and water. Braised those, and then after about 2-3 hours covered under aluminum foil, took them out, took the lamb shakes out, and then Betty baked orzo in the meat juices. With tomato. You know how awesome that was, man?
I bet that delicious.
So she does this. So I take a picture of her after she's put this dinner together and put it on Facebook. And they were like in 2 hours, there were 800 likes of my wife on Facebook. She was freaked out about it. She's like, oh, my God, don't put me out there and all that. I'm like, honey, come on. She's like, I look terrible. I don't think she looked. She looked good. I mean, she just cooked a meal for 20 people, and she, you know, oven back and forth, and she looked great. But 800 likes in 2 hours?
That's something.
What is that about?
I think it's that she's, providing, and she's a beautiful woman, and it's a great-looking meal, and it's got that, you know, that joie de vivre that you just can't bottle.
And why not? And I told her, I said I'd write about it. And I want everybody who follows me on Facebook to know, I have to commend you for not getting snarky with my wife. I appreciate it because I know she's, to me, she's the most beautiful woman in the world. And people did not go overboard. You know what I mean? Sometimes people can go overboard. And I just thought, is there anything better than being with your family, everyone together, kids, cousins, aunts, uncles, your wife, your mom, grandmother, and Zeus the Wonder Dog? I just can't think of anything better in life than to be able to do that. What do you think?
No, I mean, that is life.
So is this holy? Now we're in the Holy Week period in the Roman Catholic Church. It's coming up, right?
Coming up, yes.
So are you doing anything special in Easter?
I'll be with my family. My family cooks in my family. So we'll be going out for Easter brunch after Mass.
What do you like to have for Easter brunch?
We go to one of those, like, it's called the Cotillion. It's not the Cotillion, but it's one of those, you know, it's a banquet hall that does, you know, a full service brunch with, you know, with the kids. They've got like a little kids table and they have a full
service. They can run around. Yeah, you need to be relaxed, right? You can't have one of those stuffy.
Although there are people who get too relaxed. I mean, it's Easter, I'm suit and tie with my family.
Right. You're not showing up in a Blackhawks jersey with flip-flops like no, you would at work.
That would be sacrilege. Right. No, no flip-flops.
I know, you don't.
That's Ryan Burrow, a good friend, Ryan Burrow.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but the thing that kills me is you get in there and there are, you know, jeans and T-shirts and gym shoes, and it's Easter brunch. You know, it's not in a church. It's not in a facility. I get that. But still, it's Easter brunch. You're going out to be seen in public. And I see that, and it just drives me nuts.
All right, let's put Jeff Carlin's prescription out there for everybody. You're going out on Easter, have some shoes on, men. Shine those shoes. If you're going to wear jeans, I guess if you're really a bum, you will. Otherwise, wear a pair of slacks, a jacket, and a shirt. Maybe you don't have to wear a tie. I guess we're beyond the ties.
Yeah.
Now that I still wear a tie when I'm not in my English professor look, right? With the crew neck sweaters and
the patches on your elbows.
Yes, I don't have that or a pipe, but at least don't look slobby going out on Easter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Easter parade, but Easter was the day when I was, where kids, you know, the girls wear their first best dress, their new dress of the year. I know this is not 1890, but, you know, put some clothes on, take the flip-flops off. Women, put some makeup on. Men, shave, or if you have a beard, trim it, and at least bathe for everybody, and have a great Easter for everyone. That's all I'm saying.
Sounds good to me.
I carry 23 great wounds, all got in battle. 75 men have I killed with my own hands in battle. I scatter, I burn my enemies' tents. I take away their flocks and herds. The Turks pay me a golden treasure, yet I am poor. Because I am a river to my people.
All right. Now on the phone is my buddy and ace political analyst, Tom Serafin of Serafin and Associates. Good day, sir.
Hey, how are you doing, John?
I'm doing good. Listen, off the mic, we were talking about lamb shanks
and your beautiful wife.
Yeah, okay, so you're a political consultant. Tell me this. I put her picture on Facebook after she cooks this great meal, and immediately within an hour there's 800 likes. What is going on? Should I run her for office or what?
Well, you absolutely run her for office. You know that. And, you know, she has a very good point of view. You know, she speaks softly, but when she speaks, people do listen.
Hey, listen, so, speaking of speaking softly, she told me, just before I told her you were going to be on, she said, yeah. Ann said the four of us are going to some charity fundraiser or something, right?
Yeah, Helping Hands out there in the suburbs. They do a lot of good charity work and help people that are in special needs. And it's nice of you to be able to do that. You know, you will highlight the room for a lot of people.
Oh, that's not the thing. The thing is to be with you and to help Helping Hands, which is a great organization.
Right.
And we like to help people. That's what we do.
Yeah. Right.
And now help the listeners of the Chicago Way to make sense, first of all, since all politics is local, make sense of what happened on primary day. What
well, I
the
thought
heck happened?
The unions won big. I thought Tony Prenklogo won big, and I thought Mike Madigan won pretty big. You know, with regard to that fifth district race, you know, with Duncan and Juliana.
Huge, right?
Big victory for the speaker, and I saw her at the television station this morning where we were both appearing, and as she said, it was a victory for the residents of the fifth district.
She really believes that, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, she did, you know, sound, look, and appear very sincere.
Let's see. She had Boss Madigan supporting her because Ken Duncan strayed off the reservation and had to have his head chopped off. And then the president of the United States, reaches down from the Olympian Heights to cut commercials for a state rep primary?
Wow. Whoa. You know, and why did he do that? Of all the races in the country, of all the gin joints.
In all the world.
Right. Yes. You know, so, I mean, years ago, the speaker moved. Remember he moved the primary?
Yeah.
In 2008 or 2007, yeah, whenever that was.
For Barack, yeah.
Right, and maybe that's one of the reasons why. I don't think there was any great love for Ken Duncan on the part of the president, but, you know, when people asked him later, you know, 2 weeks later, whether or not he was going to make an endorsement in the Bernie Sanders-Hillary contest, he said, well, you know, I'm going to take a long, hard look at things, but he didn't take a lot of time to take a look at that race. He jumped in right away. So,
well, you know, part of that, too, is Duncan used audio clips of Obama in one of his ads talking positively about him. And
right.
He got wind of it. He's like, oh, you know, I'm not endorsing him, but I better counter that. And I don't think he liked being used against his, you know, open will.
Although I think that occurred when he appeared in Springfield.
Right.
He talked about reaching across the aisle, and Ken Duncan stood up and said something.
And he said, sit down, Duncan.
Right. And it was that incident and that trip that prompted people that were with the president to volunteer to do something for Ken Duncan. I mean, for his opponent. So
you
have a point there.
Both of you can cover it in any little, you know, chiffon, whatever little what do you wrap presents in? That paper, right?
Tissue paper
that you want.
That tissue paper, you can look two ways at it.
Listen, I'm not in Venezuela. I'm just in Chicago. But I'm telling you this. Barack Obama joins Mike Madigan so that Boss Madigan keeps control of his supermajority. And that's, I always, you know, a wise guy in politics taught me. He once said to me at Gene and Giorgetti's, Tom, he said, always think about who benefits. And you know who that person was? You.
Who benefits,
right? Who's the beneficiary? You said it. Who's the beneficiary here? Mike Madigan.
The speaker. He's got veto-proof majority again. And the other side of the issue is that Governor Rauner, who brought the state chamber of commerce into this whole thing. You know, the Illinois State Chamber of Commerce is kind of a docile, you know, not dormant, but, you know, it's kind of a business organization that does seminars and things. They loaned $900,000 plus to the Duncan race in the last week and a half, and people raised their eyebrows about that everywhere around the state because they never participate, especially at that level. So the governor showed some reach and had some impact downstate in some other legislative races in primaries, but not a primary with this kind of significance, you know, when it comes to, you know, impacting Springfield. And of course, you still have to go through the general election in November. But the governor, you know, money's not a big thing with the governor. So it is with everybody else, with the unions and with the Democratic Republican organizations. Raising money is everything.
Right. You got to ask real estate people to kick in if they want, not that they'd be forced to, but if they're vast real estate holders downtown, maybe they'd want to help a Democrat once in a while, you know? Right.
Right. Right. And so when you talk about victory, you know, who won in the fifth district? I mean,
Mike Madigan.
What's going to change? I guess I should ask the question differently. What will change in the 5th district now as far as representative government and helping those people with jobs and what is necessary in that part of the city?
The way things are set up, the people stay on whatever plantation they want to stay on, regardless of their ethnic group, there's the Democratic way, and if you're not on it, the Republican way has been for the white shoes and the country club guys, and there's got to be somebody in them. You know, that's why I've always thought Trump, even though I don't think much of him as a candidate, I've got to think of him as a guy who understands that middle ground between those two poles and was able to touch on that and drive an amazing presidential election. I know it's a rather clumsy transition, but Tom, you've worked on many campaigns in your life, and how do you see this thing folding out on the Republican side between Trump and Cruz?
Well, you know, Cruz has put together a terrific organization, and in probably any other election cycle, he would probably be running, you know, number one at this point. But you have an angst out there and an anger that's been building for years, and it didn't start in 2008 with Obama. It started before that.
Yes.
And you know, it started, you know, you could talk about NAFTA back in the 90s, and you could talk about what happened with George Bush back in 91 during the recession, you know, when he didn't recognize the difference of what a barcode was.
How to buy milk, right.
Right. But there has been this growing, what's the term that people use today, oligarchy in Washington, D.C., where the transition of federal and state employees serving us has kind of moved, and now we are serving them. And that attitude in the country has grown as they see less and less response to what their concerns are. And the people being elected to public office are no longer responding to the needs of the average citizen. And they see these deals being made all over the world. They see our jobs being exported. We see the situation we have here in Illinois, which just exaggerates everything around the world, and no response. And here's a guy comes along who seems to feel the same way we do, and we watched him on television. I don't watch that show, but I remember
Apprentice,
my sister, who an executive at Sears and Roebuck for 25 years, business person dealing with all that corporate boardroom politics and stuff.
Right.
And my sister tells me one day, about 8 years ago, you're in business, Tom. You don't watch that show because it says a lot about how a business should be run and could be run if you handled it and manage it right. And so, you know, I never did watch it. And after Trump started starring in this thing, I went back and took a look at some of this. What the guy did was fire incompetent people. He fired people that didn't get along with other people on projects. He eliminated the problems in order to get something done in every program. And I thought to myself, my goodness, people have been watching this guy firing incompetents for 10 years, getting rid of the deadwood. People like Brad Blagojevich, he liked these people. He told them they were nice people, but they weren't cutting the job, so they had to go. And all of a sudden, he's running for office at the right time, at the right place, when people think the country's going to hell because our leaders in Washington are not doing the job, are incompetent, and need to be fired. And this guy, no matter who he is, how bad he is, what kind of crude language he uses, you know, what kind of mannerisms and names he calls other people, they can tolerate that because they just want somebody to shake things up and walk into that Congress and into the White House like Andrew Jackson and mess up the furniture and kick out the people and bring in a whole new group of people.
They want somebody to go down there and kick them right in the crotch where they belong.
Right.
Where it, you know, they want to put that boot right there, and they feel like doing it. They can't do it. And you're right that there's been sort of, and I think in the media part of this, part of the media antipathy toward Trump is predictable in that it's either driven by the, you know, the left that wants to make him toxic to protect Hillary, who's going to be a loser, or the right, or the, let's say, the neocon right that feels it's losing its way and control of the Republican Party.
Right.
But there's another element there, which is the people, as you pointed out, the people are frustrated to the point where they've seen all these insiders making deals, and their kids are fine, their kids are going to school, they've got money, Loudoun County and all those places around Washington, everyone's rich, they're not hurting for anything.
It just seems perfect for him. I mean, I don't think it was planned. I don't think he has any idea what's going on.
But he can read the electorate.
Right. Yeah. Everything he's done is against any kind of conventional wisdom you would suggest. Counterintuitive. Campaign consultants are losing their jobs and careers because of the way he's going about this business, John. It's incredible what he has done in this particular cycle.
Now, he's going to be going up probably against Hillary Clinton, who I'm identifying as the last establishment candidate standing. And I don't think it's going to be an establishment year. And I know that people are like, oh, she's going to swamp him and blah, 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 blah. I think that if it's a one-on-one, you know, I think Cruz has a shot to beat her. But I don't think people should count Trump out against Hillary Clinton. I just don't think that's wise.
Well, they're suggesting that it would be like a Goldwater in 64, the conservative who was trounced by LBJ because of his standings. But people forget that Donald Trump is not a conservative. In fact,
no.
In the exit polls yesterday, the very conservatives were with Cruz, and the somewhat conservatives were with Donald Trump in the exit polls. So he's a Democrat, Republican when he needs to be.
He's
but
a
he's
big
more
government
of a,
guy.
Yeah, he's a kind of a free thinker. He's going to go many different directions. And what he needs to do is pin himself down on what he's going to run on outside of the anger issue. He's got to get a good staff around him and put an organization together. You know, everything he's done has been freebasing, literally, in this race.
Right.
And it's extraordinary. You notice who last night was reading from a teleprompter and a script. It wasn't the Republican Party candidates. The three or four that I saw last night on the Republican side versus what Hillary was doing. The Democrats are still very scripted. And she is adopting Bernie Sanders' message. And Rubio is adopting, last night when he gave his concession speech, which was, I thought, a pretty good speech, but he was adopting Donald Trump's message. So, you know, she doesn't have a message, and she hasn't had a message, which is the reason Bernie Sanders is doing so well, because he does have a message. It does resonate with Democratic voters, especially left-of-center voters, and it's working. And she's going to have a place somewhere at the convention and in the party structure for Bernie Sanders if she expects to win. And I don't think they want to make room for Bernie Sanders on the D side. On the Republican side, Donald Trump is not going to give this thing up. And it's going to be very hard for Paul Ryan or anybody else to be positioned to take it away from him. They're in for a fight of their lives if they think the establishment that they can go into the contested election.
Tom,
no way.
You made a great point with that. I think what Trump is really keying in on is, like you said, those people who are watching reality TV, people who are at home, people who haven't voted. And I made this analogy last week, and John kind of rolled his eyes at me, but it's the Kim Kardashian effect. It's these people who've been disengaged from this, and now they're saying, well, here's somebody I know, here's somebody I've seen, I feel like I've got that kinship. And he's keying in on that, and I think you're actually wrong. I think it sounds like a lot of what he's doing is, you know, off the cuff and not filtered and not thought through. There's a great piece in the New York Times from over the weekend where it's Roger Stone kind of explaining that, you know, in 08, you know, Trump was kind of toying with the idea of running, and he didn't. And then again in 2012, he planned this all out. He went to test groups. He went to conservative conventions, and he saw what really fired people, and he did test groups with certain ideas. And those things exploded with people who were these outsiders, people who never voted, who've never thought about politics as being something they could even affect, that they were on the outside looking in. And these reality fans, he just went after them. He says, forget it. I'll get the conservatives because I'm going to blow them all away because I'm not going to run as a Democrat. And now I've got this idea where I can blow up this outsider group and bring them in, and they'll push me over the edge. And I think that's what we're seeing, and I think it's almost unstoppable, because look at Kim Kardashian again. She's got hundreds of millions of followers and things, and it's the same type of personality.
But the difference, I think the difference is, I think you've got the finger on some of it, but the difference is with Donald Trump is that he actually, you know, is accomplished. Now, you know, he's a businessman, had bankruptcies. He's in business. He's an accomplished individual in whatever he did. He's accomplished and recognized. And then he goes on the air and does this reality show. But the reality show is about dealing with incompetence and people that can't get along and produce results. It's a different kind of reality. Kardashian is just, you know, it's just, you know,
look at my
butter on the bread.
Sure, but they reach the same people. Right. And that's, I think that's what's key.
I don't know.
The difference is that people are turned off.
Right. And now you're working two part-time jobs or three, all under 20 hours a week because of Obamacare. And you're thinking, what the heck happened to my life? And for the media and people to, I think, make fun of them or disparage them or call them Hitler lovers or whatever, that is really ultimately dangerous. Listen, before we go, I've let you go. I've got to ask you a question. The president this week nominated Merrick Garland from the north suburbs to be his choice for the Supreme Court. Where do you think that's going to go? And what's the ultimate strategy among the Democrats as this plays out to November?
Well, you know, I got to confess, you know, before, you know, when Justice Scalia passed away a few days afterwards, everybody was jumping on the bandwagon and his body wasn't even cold yet. And I thought that was a terrible situation. But subsequent to that, I had suggested, you know, on the air that in one of my talks, I said, you know, the president should go out of his way to nominate somebody who is a moderate, middle-of-the-road individual to put the Republicans, you know, really in a corner, because there is somebody that almost everybody has agreed on and could agree on in this particular perspective. And, you know, one of his greatest sins, from what I read about this justice, is that he's soft on the Second Amendment. But everything
else,
moderate to the right. But the Republicans have insisted that they're not going to hold any hearings, and it's a political game. You know, who's going to lose? It's a political game. You know, we're not going to do this, and I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to put this guy forward.
It's about now, Schumer standing there saying, oh, my God, these Republicans, they did not let truth and justice prevail. They're evil. They're not considering our nominee.
Right.
It's all about
Vice
this.
President Joe Biden, who suggested what president was it that he did not want him to appoint a justice in his last year of office?
Reagan.
So, I mean, the precedent has been set by the Democrats.
Right.
A lot of hypocrisy on this particular issue. So nobody owns this issue. The key is, I think the president is trying to play his small t Trump card here to put the Republicans in a corner. But the Republicans have that opening after Election Day, between Election Day, the lame duck session, and early January. If Mr. Garland is still on the hook to be the nominee from the president, they lose the Senate. Let's assume they lose five seats. They lose the U.S. Senate. They still have a month and a half of time where they can hold the hearings and ratify this guy. I think the Republicans might be in pretty good shape if they can control the message from this point to November, which they've never been able to do very well.
Tom Serafin, Serafin Associates, my buddy, and me, you, Annie, and Betty will be out at the Helping Hands Foundation helping them. So I really want to thank you for being part of the Chicago
Life. Yeah, it's an honor and pleasure to talk to you guys. Have a very good day.
All right.
Okay, thanks, buddy. Thanks.
Thank you. Listen, thanks to Christian McQuarrie, to Jeff Carlin, Tom Serafin, to all of you listening, and I thank my wife, Betty, for putting up with my nonsense. This has been another episode of the best podcast in Chicago, The Chicago Way.